any further good to that person unless perhaps a very terrible emergency arises. Under this form of self-delusion, you can have all kinds of optical phenomena, as in the case of hypnosis. Under hypnosis, a person can definitely see things that are not there and can also be deprived of seeing things that are there. Under auto-hypnosis, fantasy may be mingled with reality into a hopeless confusion, so that it is quite conceivable that almost anything you wish to believe, whether it's the presence of superior beings, angels, or deities, can be reproduced psychologically by the intensity of your own belief. It can actually become visual because of the intensity of psychological believing. Unfortunately, of course, anything that originates within yourself, no matter how glamorous it may be, in the form of phenomena, cannot go beyond whatever you are. You receive a message saying that in the due course of time, a secret unknown to anyone else is going to be given to you. Well, the secret is never given. Why? Because it would require something to come out of you that isn't there. The secret cannot be communicated because you do not know it in the first place. Therefore, some entity or being that you have fabricated cannot give it to you. I know a number of practical cases of this, in which a person under a belief fixation have given entire life waiting for the revelation of that great and secret message. It never came, because the person himself could not fabricate more than his own consciousness possessed. This means of the futility of most forms of revelation. The only way in which a genuine revelation can come is through a deep and abiding integrity, and through a full or at least reasonable understanding of the processes of human growth. Almost all great religions have had their mystical beliefs and their mystical sects, and these are always developed along one line, one pattern, which involves humility, dedication, integrity, and discipline. These are the priceless ingredients. The discipline is not primarily to be given to you by someone else. Unless, as in the case of a small child, discipline is necessary because the person is not yet able to discipline themselves. But if this discipline is given, it is supported by a solid foundation of known facts. The reasons for it are clearly given. The authority for it is clearly revealed. And the individual is not in the presence of anything mysterious and strange or unreasonable. But disciplines and the gentle art of growing are the keys to spiritual integrity. A life of service is far more important than a life dedicated to self-development per se. The individual who is studying in order to be better themselves very often gets into trouble. The reason why we should study is because we want to be more useful to the common good. We wish to live better lives. It is not that we wish to be superior to others, but that we wish to be suitable to the needs of others in their various walks of life and their various degrees of personal unfoldment. The problems of communities involved in this type of activity, this type of problem is very, very much in evidence. A community of spiritually oriented people is in the same dilemma that the world is in today, for the reason that every nation believes it is right and cannot get along with anyone else. most of these groups of persons either have to be dominated by an individual whose knowledge may not be adequate, or else the gradually competition comes in. The individual is no longer satisfied. He must either finally agree with the others or depart. And if the others were doing a job good enough to agree with, it might be different, but this is not always the case. So for the most part, the person grows best by staying in the world, meeting the problems of the day with integrity, and recognizing that the problems and responsibilities of life are the great initiators into the mystery of the Holy Spirit, that there is no other way in which it can be done successfully. So we have tried to work out, in one way or another, suggestions and recommendations for persons who are out of their depth in what might be termed spiritual growth. It's not because they're growing too fast or have grown too rapidly. It's the fact that they are confused where they are. And instead of finding the things they are doing are bringing them this enlightenment, they come out at the end of 5, 10, 20 years of dedicated devotion, no wiser than they were before. If their dedication was sincere, they may do well and grow even if the instruction is wrong. Because it is not the instruction, it is the dedication and the integrity that constitute the source of growth. You may follow a doctrine that cannot be proven, and you can grow from it, simply because you make changes in yourself that take care of the problem. You become more dedicated, more devout, more sincere. And through unselfish dedication to an idea, even though the idea may not be completely correct, there is a definite growth to the person. This is why all sects of religion, regardless of whether we approve of them or not, are equally important in bringing to each individual the opportunity to make a personal dedication to something greater than himself. This is the important thing. But it is one thing to be dedicated to a great pattern of things, and quite another to be dedicated to something that is ephemeral, has no essential substance, and is backed only by a weight of words rather than a weight of deeds. So we try to work out some kind of a solution to these particular problems. If, in the course of trying to grow sincerely and lovingly and as wisely as you know, you're in trouble, particularly in trouble involving the nervous system, in dreams, spiritual visitations, various obsessional factors, or visitations, or if you believe you're being haunted, or if your health is failing, or your family can no longer get along with you, the point is stop right then and there. Stop any system which makes it impossible for you to be a normal person. Because growth is not by way of abnormalcy. Growth is an expansion of normalcy to higher levels of usefulness and integrity. The moment your disciplines are giving you a headache or a backache or interfering with blood pressure or causing you to see things that are disagreeable or disturb your sleep, result in the feeling or awareness of presences that are not there, the moment this type of thing begins, stop the discipline right in its tracks. Go no further. And if you are the member of a group, then the thing for you to do is go directly to the leader of that group and tell them what the trouble is and what they say you should do about it. In most cases, people who have come to me have tried this, and the group leader has not been able to help them. Because actually, the leader is not really much better informed than his followers. He doesn't know what to do when development exercises cause trouble. Development exercises, in general, are an effort to make spiritual growth a scientific process. In certain areas, as in the higher phases of Raja Yoga and things of this nature, advanced stages of Zen, there are many very important scientific factors involved. But nobody gets to that point until he is well qualified to accept these revelations without self-delusion. It takes anywhere from 5 to 20 years of patient self-improvement to prepare the individual for some very advanced type of instruction. The whole system has to be built up. Every part of life has to be brought into coordination. For whatever the weaknesses are, they are the things that will get you into trouble. A most common weakness is gullibility. And against that, there is no defense except common sense. So if you are being instructed, try to find out how this instruction is being given and what the instruction is. And if it does not work, stop it. If any unpleasant symptoms arise, stop it. If you find that you are not well integrated in the activity you are carrying on, supposing you feel and discover from experience that the group activity with which you are associated is not good for you. The answer to that is move out of the group. Now, there's a catch in this, however. For a great many groups have the attitude that if you leave them, they will punish you. You are warned that if you do not stay with the organization, that the organization will do various psychic things to hurt you. The moment this comes into the picture, anyone with common sense knows the quicker they get out, the better. But to a great many persons who have become believers in the power of mind over matter, who are convinced that this teacher could produce an adverse or malicious force in their lives, these people settle down to frightening themselves to death. It doesn't follow that the leader of the group has to do anything. The individual who believes he can and believes he would will take care of the situation themselves. They'll have all the experiences, all the persecutions, all the psychic maliciousness you can imagine, simply because they believe firmly that the person whom they suspect is well able to perform such activity. Actually, the person who decides that it's time to go and not be part of it any longer must follow that basic instinct and go, and realize in himself that in so doing he is defending truth and defending his own consciousness against errors which he previously accepted. Normally speaking, the problem of this malicious influence from someone else fades out very quickly if the person develops other interests. But if they are frightened to death, go and live alone in a room or an apartment, settle back and worry over every night that this is going to happen, then you have the type of person who is fit for exorcism. A person who is frightened to death by the fears of his own inner imagination. This common situation is unfortunately quite prevalent. Now, another type of psychic phenomena that very often seems to show up at the present time is this problem of automatic writing or things of that nature, something like the Ouija board. The planchette, as it was called in Europe, was forbidden in France because of the number of deaths, crimes, miseries that were caused by this little table, which was referred to in Europe as the devil's flat iron. The Ouija board is about the poorest source of information in the world. And yet people who would never believe a factual statement surrender instantly if they believe that their granduncle is on the Ouija board with them. This makes it a wonderful, mysterious, overwhelming thing. Ella Wheeler Wilcox went through the session of the Ouija board and came out very strongly against it. But many persons who have been bereaved feel that this is a way of communicating with the dead. Another way of communicating is your automatic writing. And your automatic writing is almost always psychological rather than psychic. It is a method of negatively getting out of your system things that are there. The fact that you do not consciously move your hand doesn't mean that a ghost is doing it. It simply means that your own subconscious has taken control of it. And out of it will come whatever your subconscious has in it. Now, it may be that in some cases the subconscious might have a little genuine information for you, but more likely it is simply a problem of releasing frustrations, neurotic pressures, personal unhappiness, and seeking some kind of an escape from boredom or the sense of personal inferiority. So the thing to do is, if possible, to get away from all these things. We are not supposed to strengthen our present life by contact with those who have gone before, who, while they were alive, may not have been any better off than we are. The death does not transform a person into a prophet, a seer, or a saint, or a sage. The only thing that accomplishes this is the experience of life in this world in the daily meeting of responsibilities and problems. So all this type of thing is fascinating, and it is something that catches the mind in a web. Now, against this, of course, has been the very strong and positive influence of materialism. Materialism simply discounts the entire field. Your materialist does not have these kind of experiences. It's very rare. If an utter materialist has such an experience, it really is worth giving a careful look at that particular happening. But for the most part, the materialist is not bothered by any of these things. He doesn't suffer from ghosts. He doesn't live in haunted houses. He doesn't have any worry over automatic writing. He doesn't have a Ouija board and doesn't want it. And it never occurs to him that his deceased relatives want to communicate with him, because he does not believe in the survival of life after death. Therefore, his deceased relatives have no existence as far as he is concerned. As a result is very little psychic involvement. Now, however, we're having a change in the mood. A great many persons who were materialists up to a short time ago are beginning to contemplate such problems as the extrasensory perception and reincarnation and karma, and even other forms of esoteric Eastern or Western mysticism. We are beginning to develop what might be termed a level of mysticism among more informed and cultured people. It is no longer a folk belief. It is now a belief that is beginning to influence scientific thinking. It is beginning to result in a new approach to life after death and a new interpretation of the mysteries of what lies beyond the grave. Escaping from the dogmatism of literal theology, the mind goes to philosophy, to ethics, to religion, and to mysticism, and gradually applies in these fields something of the scientific process which has previously been limited largely to materialism. So we have a new type of psychic investigator who is approaching it not as an easy believer, but not with a mind locked against it. Now, in the times of Oliver Lodge and Conan Doyle, your scientist who became a spiritualist really was completely out of his depth. He was therefore a divided person, a scientist in his mind and a spiritualist because of emotional pressure within himself, usually involved with the death of someone close to him. Now, however, we have a somewhat different point of view. New type of research is not based upon a desire for consolation from beyond the grave. It is now an effort to expand the dimensions of life, to discover, if possible, what is happening in the psychic, soul, and spirit realms of human and human existence, to find out the causal world, the world from which things descend into visibility. Now, and not too long ago, anything in that invisible world, if it existed at all, was frightening. Demons were invisible to the average person, but they were part of the inhabitants of this world of Dante's Inferno. We were afraid of the dark. We were afraid of that type of darkness which is called the unknown. We were afraid that outside of the range of our own physical limitations was a realm of values so immense, so incredible, and so complicated that the human mind could not cope with it. So it was best to leave the curtain down and not attempt to be faced with more than would be possible to the average person's comprehension. Now, however, the tendency is to look in that direction, to see if we can release the mind from the prison of materiality, if we can escape from this dismal procedure of assuming that life simply is a transitory thing and that we are all surrounded by a collective and individual oblivion. This type of thing seems to be supported by a considerable amount of science. Scientists begin to recognize that there are various threads that they are following, all gradually lead to something which they cannot see and which as yet they have been unable to estimate. But it's certain that gradually estimation of these factors will come, and we will have a broadening of our background as far as spiritual realities are concerned. No one can really live a good life who does not believe in immortality, does not believe in the reality of a deity, does not really believe in ethics and integrities. All of the great religions of the world have given us this priceless heritage of the realization that existence is a divine purpose, that the individual and everything that lives exists for a purpose, that we cannot, under any conditions, survive as sincere, civilized beings unless we give more thought to where we came from, a little more attention to where we are, and a great deal of very sober reasoning as to where we go from here. We cannot live without perspective. Religion and philosophy give us perspective. Science gives us instruments and by means of which we can organize our various thoughts and censor them and save ourselves from a mass of hallucinational material. So in psychic phenomena, more and more universities are becoming interested. Professorships are being set up to study the problem. And the sensitivities of individuals in telepathy and things of this nature are being studied and classified. We are on the verge of discovering a new level of human existence. When that level comes to us, however, it's going to be natural. It is not going to be something that frightens us to death. We are not going to lift the curtain and find chaos on the other side. Nor are we going to find this other side filled with evil spirits all the souls of a destructive dead. This problem of what we're going to find there will gradually be solved, and we will discover that the invisible cause of visibility is not evil. It is not something terrifying. It is not nothing but punishment. It is, in fact, a new land which we are going to have to explore and colonize in due time. Lands and worlds that lie beyond our present temporal boundaries. But whatever is there is not going to hurt us. It's not going to be dangerous to us. We are in more danger here than we will ever be hereafter. We must find the solution to our present danger through the reorganization of society. And we must find the solution to our inner anxieties about the invisible through the gradual organization of our own understanding and insight. We're going to have to gradually develop common sense in dealing with this uncommon subject. And if we can do this in a creditable manner, we will get along pretty much as we should. We also have to watch a little bit, I think, the involvement of a very poor philosophy of esotericism in entertainment. We are having all kinds of films now dealing with obsessions, with possessions. We are having all kinds of demoniacal factors, all kinds of psychic persecution. All this type of thing is coming to us under the sponsorship of Ola Margarine and detergents. It is very interesting to see demons rising on every hand on the 15 or 18 inch screen with intermissions for donuts. But in a sense, this type of thing is becoming a hardship upon all of us. It becomes a hardship because seeing is believing. And things that are seen are very difficult to reject. Things we hear, we can get over. But things we see have a certain verisimilitude, which works a great hardship upon the easy believer. And being bombarded with this type of thing constantly, and having horror picture after horror picture imposed upon us, the viewer, even children, find it increasingly difficult not to be affected. And for millions of people, all these horror films are actually believed to be based upon solid fact. They are accepted as realities, which is something we should never do. Up to a few years ago, we had another group of realities. That is the dramatic production, which consisted very largely of compounds of human misery. We had nothing but disappointed, disillusioned, frustrated people. We had infidelity, we had corruption, immorality, and everything as part of society. And we gradually have not only come to believe all this to be true, but we have inspired otherwise normal persons to experiment with it themselves. We are creating delinquency to support the fact that we believe the picture is telling the truth. And we keep on until the picture does tell the truth. Now, your psychic problem is the same thing. We are creating beliefs that are unsound, unfair, unreasonable. We are causing people to become more and more fearful. We are advertising and documenting of situations that have been manufactured, presumably for our entertainment. But anyone who finds these things entertaining had better make a very careful examination of his own inner life, because he's on the verge of trouble already. We should not be entertained by that which is unreasonable, destructive, morbid, or revolting to our normal faculties. So we have to watch this, because we'll have more and more of this type of thing. more and more propaganda about infernal beings, of mysterious creatures, and it now is beginning to take shape that we are going to switch our point of emphasis from flying saucers to flying demons. We are gradually going to create realities in our own thinking which have no foundation in fact. Persons who are interested in growth or trying to live better lives and get somewhere with their problems will be wise to censor their viewing of a great deal of this type of material and censor their reading of books of this kind. Persons interested in these subjects are instinctively inclined to pick up a book that seems to deal with a subject close to their own hearts, but they do not realize what the author is going to do with the material, and very often it ends merely in enlarging terror, fear, or anxiety, or causing the person to accept as true something that has no authority whatever except in a writer's imagination. So, to keep this psychic situation under control, we have to constantly guard ourselves against over-influence. Over-influence is one of the most common problems we have. And if we're not careful, the mere fact of our own sincerity may get us into trouble. We are so anxious to know more, we are so anxious to learn more, and we are so hopeful that something good will be said, that we open ourselves to a great deal of psychic confusion. For a long time, we had very little black magic in our environment, but it is also beginning to become more prevalent. Sorcery and all this type of thing, ritual magic, all this form of activity is becoming more frequent. Only a person in a position like mine knows what frequency means. We know a little bit about how these things are being spread and who is being influenced by them. And we cannot do better than to warn everyone to refrain from involvement in any type of procedure which is inclined to create visual phenomena. We have people who are trying to develop the yoga systems who are in serious trouble because they have tried to become spiritual before they had become honestly adjusted as normal human beings. They were trying to develop extrasensory perceptions when they had not developed the sensory perceptions they were naturally endowed with. We like to jump into something superior. We like to think that we are uniquely capable of a much higher degree of insight than we now possess. But the truth is, we have just exactly the amount of insight that we are entitled to. And the only way to get more is to grow, to become better, to unfold our natural potentials. But to look for shortcuts and special disciplines is to open oneself to a tragedy. Therefore, we say that the psychic phenomena field can be, in part at least, genuine. That such things have happened and been recorded from the dawn of time. But that the cultivation of phenomena as a means of spiritual growth is exceedingly dangerous and should be approached only under a long probationary period of self-discipleship or the strongest possible internal integrities. Nearly always the problem lies in vanity or in some form of self-interest. The person wants to be more powerful without being a better person. He wants to have more influence, but he has never developed the type of influence that would give him distinction. He wants to perhaps create an organization to be worshipped and adored himself when he is not entitled to it. Wherever self-interest, egotism, and things of this nature enter into the quest for knowledge, trouble is right there with them. The only reason why a person who is honest wants to know more is in order to serve better the needs of others. He is not seeking for self-aggrandizement. He is seeking to do the daily job better. and to help more people in more ways because he has gained certain integrities of his own. Among other things, he will have the problem of trying to keep his own children out of difficulties. The use of knowledge is to help others, not to advance one's reputation or distinction. It is not at all necessary that the individual should have ulterior motives. It is much better to be very simple, very honest, very kind, very sincere, and try to grow as nature intended, step by step, degree by degree, strengthening growth through good works, earning the next step by being true to the present step, and realizing that the journey to wisdom is a long trip, but that each step toward that end is important, and any step which is circuitous or takes the person off the main track is simply time wasted. There's only one way of growing, and that is by becoming better through self-discipline and dedication. On that basis, there's no difficulty. Or if there is difficulty, we have the resources to meet it. But when we begin to get extravagant notions, then we are already on the way to disillusionment, disappointment, and very possibly sickness and disorientation. So we advise everyone to be very cautious and very thoughtful in these matters. Well, I guess that's all for today.